Welcome to episode 22 of Bedtime Stories for Grown-Ups, a podcast that is created from the stuff of dreams. Once upon a time, if you were lucky, someone told you bedtime stories. Maybe someone read you books, or the same favorite book over and over. Or maybe someone made up your bedtime stories, telling you nonsensical things until you closed your eyes and let sleep take you away. These bedtime stories are the whimsical made-up kind, little scenes from dreamland to guide you there. There is no plot to follow, no sense to make of anything, just a sequence of images from beyond the consciousness of day to help you let go and drift into dreamland. We were all lounging around outside, reclining in empty clawfoot bathtubs. Suddenly, a bumblebee pulled up on a tiny motorcycle and asked if we could help him remove his helmet. When we took off his helmet, he turned into a small bald man. He had come from the building next door, where the cool people lived, and where the Europeans stayed when they were in town. He was asking us about unusual places in the area to visit. We lived at the very end of the road. A German woman came out of the building where the cool people lived and said she was going to look for the Wi-Fi, and she asked if we would like to join her. We decided to go with her, because we were already at the end of the road anyway. We followed her through a maze of underground tunnels and chambers. Sometimes, we even had to crawl. It was quite dark in this place, and we were not sure exactly how she was managing to navigate, because we could barely see anything. There were strange people in dark corners, lounging in clawfoot bathtubs. She greeted them all with respect and empathy, and they appreciated being acknowledged. She said that her husband loved the bathtub people, and that's why they had come to this place. He liked to crawl in with them to snuggle sometimes. And apparently, the bathtub people didn't mind. Eventually, we found our way back to where she had come from. We weren't surprised at all that there was no Wi-Fi here. How far underground are we? Maybe if we crawl back to where there is a little light coming from above ground, we might get a signal. We had arrived just at the tail end of a wedding that wasn't turning out so well for the bride and groom. They were drunk and disorderly and had gotten into a fight, and now the police had shown up. Were the bride and groom going to be charged? Most likely, they would have to spend the night in jail. An unusual place to spend the first night of your honeymoon. We had been told that the people in this place were quite eccentric. still, we were a little taken aback when the very elderly woman sitting a few rows in front of us on the bus started going on in a loud voice about how much her husband loves performing cunnilingus. The elderly man who had told us about the reputation for eccentricity turned around and winked at us knowingly. And the woman just kept talking, sharing a little too much, and a little too loudly, perhaps. To arrive at this place, we had to go through a long and winding tunnel, and at one point, we had to accelerate enough so that we were only driving on two wheels. And as we rounded the last corner, then the road became a wall. We had bought some souvenirs here before, and now one of the little dragons wasn't speaking to us anymore. Perhaps it just needed a new battery. But we had forgotten to bring the little dragon with us this time. We have many souvenirs from distant broken lands. We are really, really far from the farthest shore. So far that we cannot even see it. We ended up in a huge valley beyond the city. Everything had been raised to make way for a new development. More urban sprawl. Now it looked like a barren moonscape. There was nothing living in this place. We were going on foot now. It was hard walking. There seemed to be a lot less oxygen here. And more gravity. It seemed like any wrong step could trigger a deadly landslide. And it was going to be dark soon. We needed to make our way back to where we came from. We could see other groups of people trying to make their way out of the wasteland. It was dangerous in the wasteland. And even more dangerous if you were traveling alone. We are trying to listen to a radio play, but we can hear the neighbors talking about that explosion in Florida. Or was it a giant sinkhole? Whatever it is terrible. The water in that area is now filled with radioactive poison. We don't even want to think about it. We cannot bear it. We are in a dispute with our neighbors. They are in our house. Or are we in theirs? The house is full of ornate furniture and beautiful Persian carpets. There are a lot of long hallways going in every direction. They used some young children to trick us into going down the wrong hallway. And then we found ourselves outside. We are pretty sure that something strange and nefarious is going on in that house. But it will forever remain a mystery now. In the house, we had discovered a tiny man in a box. He is somewhere between 6 and 9 inches tall. We let him out of the box to have the run of the place. But now we are not so sure if we should let him run around while we are out. Maybe he would try to sabotage the neighbor's party. And now we cannot find him. Oh dear. We finally find him in the kitchen, struggling to open a giant bottle of beer. It is not something he can manage on his own. We say we will get him some food and water, if he agrees to go back in the box while we are out. Now it is our turn. So we are heading out and down the hill. We come to a beautiful setting, a beautiful saltwater lagoon full of fish and urchins, an idyllic place to swim. There is a raven standing at the shore. We are able to get very close to him. Is this a domesticated raven? Because he is wearing some sort of colorful dress. It seems to be restricting his ability to fly. How cruel. The raven is curious and intelligent. He can project his thoughts. We can hear his thoughts in our minds. He is wondering who we are. There is a large sea serpent creature playing in the surf. And there is an enormous and out-of-control freighter barreling toward the creature. The freighter is losing its cargo. Someone holds a pole out to the creature, and it grasps and clings to it, and is drawn out of the way of the out-of-control freighter, just as it is running aground. The sea creature has been saved, and we are still breathing. We are working at an unusual resort. It is a place where depressed, middle-aged men go to end their lives. We have to sort through their things after they are gone. This one was quite a handsome man. We are sorting through his things, including some big fluffy white towels. What kind of man was this? It is very unusual for depressed middle-aged men to have a supply of clean white towels. And we want to know, can we keep these towels? We lived in a building, and there was a grave and imminent threat. The only way to save us was if someone crawled up the outside of the building to the roof and reconnected something. But in doing so, that person would die. A young man volunteered, knowing the circumstances. He was doing it for the greater good, he said. And so he clambered up the side of the building to the roof and was hanging onto something when there was a massive lightning strike. And we were all saved. But the young man was dangling lifeless off the side of the roof. We were all sobbing, but also so grateful. So grateful to be alive. And then someone came running and saying, "He's alive. He's alive." And it was the young man who had clambered up onto the roof to save us. He had come back to life. He was going to be okay. We are constantly switching to different scenes, new places, with new characters. It is like switching channels, dream channels. And we have different identities every time. So many different characters, in so many different scenes. It is hard to keep up. We don't know how the actors can possibly manage to remember all of their lines. A pair of grebes are running across the water together. They must be a mating pair. We are trying to be very calm and still, so that we do not disturb their dance. We come upon a huge eagle on the ground. We are able to get very close to him. Too close. We are surprised that he doesn't fly away. Perhaps he is injured. And then we see the other bird. A large black bird, though not quite as big as the eagle. A large raven. The two birds are dancing around each other, ruffling their feathers and puffing themselves up. Is this a territorial dispute? Is there a carcass around here somewhere? Will there be bloodshed? But it seems the displays are purely symbolic. Just a little huffing and posturing for the audience. Because eventually, the birds just fly away. The Marquis is an open-minded and generous man. He dresses all of the mice in fine clothing and builds tiny houses for them to live in. He paints magnificent landscapes for them to escape into in their tiny boats. But sometimes the Marquis is in a foul mood, and then he paints over all of the landscapes with black paint. And then comes the hail and thunder and lightning. And then there is nothing for the mice to do but lie down in the road and huddle with groups of strangers. We know we have a job to do, a very big job. There are so many disparate parts that we cannot understand how everything will somehow all come together. Everyone has a part to play, and there is always more to do. We cannot despair. We are not sure where we will be in the end. Eventually, we find ourselves in a beautiful and endless wilderness. We are traveling by boat through the water. Look, there on the shore. We can see a wolf warily watching us as we float past. And then another. We are humbled and amazed. We had thought all of the wolves were long gone. And now look at all of the fish swimming underneath us. There are so many fish you can practically walk on the water. We must have put the last of the pieces together. We are full of awe and wonder. We have arrived. We must remember to breathe.